Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview is brought to you in part by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. It's April Fool's Day. Yep, Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. But this is a bonus, so you could be listening to any time. As I do with all bonus shows, I ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
This is Nick Dunkey, Bob Dylan geek.
Yeah. Okay.
Among other things.
Yes, Nick Dunkey, investigative reporter, journalist, a longtime colleague and friend of me, husband of Ramana Hussein, a big star in the show every Friday. But I've been warning listeners, Mick, about this show for a while now. So one more time, anybody tuning in, if you expect to hear Mick Dunkey going on about Mayor Lori Lightfoot or Mayor Rahm Emanuel or Mayor Daley, how Governor Pritzker is responding to the coronavirus epidemic, what's his thoughts on Donald Trump? Is Donald Trump worse than Richard Nixon? You're not going to hear any of that today. Or maybe you will. Who knows where this conversation will go? I've been promoting this all day. This is a conversation I've been wanting to have since Saturday when, out of nowhere, Bob Dylan dropped a new song, Murder Most Foul, a 16-minute song about, ostensibly about John Kennedy. But Mick, why don't you, and by the way, I reached out to Mick. I said, who is the best person to talk to about this? And folks, when I reached out to him, I knew he was because he's a total Dylan geek. And he took the bite and he said, yeah, I'll do it. So here we are. All right, Mick, just give some folks some background on this song. It came out of nowhere. Tell us what you know about it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, at the end of last week, I think it may have actually been last Friday. That's when I first heard about it. Someone texted me, another reporter, by the way, who is otherwise busy covering the COVID-19 outbreak and all the repercussions, texted me, thankfully, to talk about something else and said, the new Dylan song sounds like someone who is winding up all of his affairs and sort of tying up loose ends. That's what the song sounds like. And I was like, that sounds fascinating. What Dylan song? So immediately, you know, went online and proceeded to listen to it incessantly for most of the last several days, as I think you did, Ben. First new Dylan music in 8 years. His last album, Tempest, dropped in 2012. He's had his last album of all new material that had dropped in 2012. He's had a couple albums where he has been covering Sinatra and other old standards, which I really didn't get too far into myself, but loved Tempest. And there's speculation that this song came out, or was recorded, I should say, around the same time as Tempest, sometime in the last decade, just because of the sound of his voice and just kind of the overall vibe of the song. But nobody heard it. Nobody publicly heard it until just a few days ago.
And when he dropped it, he had a tweet that's something along the lines, thank you fans for your, you know, paying attention to me all these years and your loyalty. So there was no explanation that, as far as I know of. Have you seen any explanation where Dylan's saying anything remotely why at this time of all times he dropped the song?
No. But it sounds like it's not coincidental that he did it at this time. And so, yeah, I'll read the actual contents of the tweet. Greetings to my fans and followers with gratitude for all your support and loyalty across the years. This is an unreleased song we recorded a while back that you might find interesting. Stay safe, stay observant, and may God be with you, Bob Dylan. So, you know, cryptic as Bob Dylan ever is, yet not coincidental that at this moment in history, he comes up with a bombshell of a song that is ruminating on other dramatic moments in history.
Yeah. Well, we'll
just
get
classic Dylan.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, you know.
Now, I was going to play a snippet, but my legal advisor, producer Dennis, urged me not to.
That's correct.
Yes, Robert Mueller weighs in too. Because Bob Dylan, of course, is a big fan of the show and would be listening and then send us a cease and desist letter. But I'm sure most of the geeks out there who are listening to this probably have listened to the song as many times as we have. And so this is what I want to say before we start taking the deep dive into the lyrics. And again, it's 16 minutes long. There's a lot of lyrics. This
17
is
17 minutes and 1654 or something like that.
1654. So, I sit corrected.
Yeah.
It's not even, I hesitate to call it a song. It's more like a poem with music in the background. How would you describe it, Mick?
That's right. I agree with you. There is no chorus. There's not like a verse chorus structure. There's no sing along moment. There's internal rhyme and whatnot, as is the case with Dylan's work going back to the 60s. There's a lot of wordplay. I mean, there's just so many references, so much wordplay. I saw that NPR posted a piece about finding at least references to at least 70 songs.
Yeah.
So they've created a playlist of dozens of songs that are referenced in this one piece by Dylan. But you're right. It's almost like he's singing. It's not quite spoken word. He's singing, but really the musical accompaniment, I don't want to say it doesn't go anywhere, because it seems to sort of rise and fall with Dylan's voice and the lyrical content. But you're absolutely right that it's not a traditional song in the sense of like, here's the chorus, let's turn this thing up and sing along with it as we're driving down the highway.
Yeah. It's definitely not a driving down the highway kind of song where you open up the windows, let the wind whip back your hair. I think I stole that from Springsteen. It just came out of nowhere. Yeah, so it's not that kind of song, and I just want to say it's probably not for everybody, to put it mildly. I sent this song out when I finally saw it, and I immediately sent it to you, and you'd already seen it, of course. I sent it to somebody who really loves, how do I put the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, okay? That's kind of taste, and Joni Mitchell, that era. And so I sent it to this person, and she responded, I don't like it at all. I like Blowing in the Wind and Tambourine. It's like, okay, poor Dylan. I guess that.
Well, all right. Yeah. First of all, we got to jump in. If the last Dylan song you like is from 1964, 1965, you definitely won't like this.
Yeah.
Even if you and I were to agree, which I don't, by the way, that was his peak artistically, he's made a lot of great music in the intervening, you know, 50 years,
yeah.
50 plus years. He's made a lot of like very strange and borderline unlistenable music as well. But he's made some great records, especially like the last, I would say he's been really on a high note, had a revival kind of in the late 90s and through the 2000s. And so this to me is of the same ilk as some of his great albums from the aughts and the early 2010s.
Yeah, but in defense of this person, I just remembered, she also mentioned Blood on the Tracks, which is 1975, I want to say, or 74.
That's correct.
So
that's correct.
It's a little more modern than 63 or 4, but point well taken. All right, let's move into the song itself. Again, as I said, it starts with John Fitzgerald Kennedy assassination, and I'll read the opening line, Mick, and you tell me what you think when I read this. It was a dark day in Dallas, November 6th. 1963, a day that will live on in infamy. President Kennedy was a riding high, good day to be living, and a good day to die. It's a pretty good opening.
It is, although it's in some ways the weakest part of the song. I mean, it's the most spelled out. He's sort of saying, you know, obviously broadcasting, this was the murder most foul I'm talking about, is the Kennedy assassination. But I also feel like he's playing with us just from the beginning. I mean, good day to be living and a great good day to die. I mean, who actually thinks it was a good day for Kennedy to die? So in some ways, you know, Dylan does this a lot, Ben. You and I have talked about this offline many times where he sometimes throws lines in there just because they kind of sound good, but he's messing with you.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a sort of irony to what he's throwing out there. And so obviously a good day to be living and a good day to die, that's a cliche. And Dylan is sort of using it, I think, to be ironic and kind of to set up, you know, the next 16 minutes of the song. So,
yeah. Well, with Dylan, you could have two arguments with it. So you're absolutely correct. It could be he just needed a phrase to get to the next sentence, which is generally my theory with complicated Bob Dylan lyrics. It's like he just had to get to the next sentence. He just threw anything out there.
Yeah.
It could be that he's messing with us with a cliche, or he could be making a point. It's a good day to be living when you're the most popular president of the United States and you got a beautiful wife and you're on a campaign trip in Texas as you sew up your reelection, get ready for a reelection that you'll probably win. And it's a good day to die, meaning it's a good day for the people who are trying to kill you to kill you. So it could go either way with it, Mick.
There you go. That's fair.
And,
yeah.
And then that leads us to the next part where he kind of lays out his theory about Kennedy's assassination. I'll read it. Being led to the slaughter like a sacrificial lamb, he said, "Wait a minute, boys, you know who I am? Of course we do. We know who you are." Then they blew off his head while he was still in the car. Shot down like a dog in broad daylight was a matter of timing, and the timing was right. You got unpaid debts. We've come to collect. We're going to kill you with hatred without any respect. And it goes on from there. What's your thoughts about that passage?
Well, like the actual assassination and how it came about, I think you could take it a lot of different ways. You know, who is the we here, Ben? I mean, you know, that's later he name drops Jack Ruby and Oswald, which is, I don't know if you're planning to go through the whole song point by point, but that's that at that point, I think is kind of the pivotal point of the song. But here, I think, you know, again, he's doing one of the two things we discussed before. He's either kind of like, he's literally talking about the Kennedy assassination, but then he's talking about a bunch of other stuff at the same time, you know, matter of timing, and the timing was right. You've got unpaid debts. Like, does he really mean that Kennedy had unpaid debts, or is this like America has unpaid debts, you know, which is kind of the way I took it, but it could be both of those.
Yeah. Things. In other words, the chickens come home to roost for America.
Exactly.
And then we're going to kill you. The next line, we're going to kill you with hatred without any respect. We'll mock you and shock you and we'll put it in your face. We've already got someone here to take your place. So this gets into the notion, we've already got someone here to take your place. This gets into the notion that the we in the sentence are conspirators who've decided that it's inconvenient to have Kennedy as a president of the United States for whatever reason, and they rather have his vice president take over, and that, of course, would be Lyndon Baines Johnson. So that's the, we've already got someone for your place. So that's like the most literal interpretation of the song. And as you were saying, you could always be on thin ice when you try to do that with Bob Dylan, because he could just look at you like, I wasn't saying that, man. I can't believe you thought that. That's my Dylan imitation.
It's not bad. It's not bad, yeah.
Mick Dumpke, man.
Yeah, I think.
But go ahead.
you know, I one of the times I saw Dylan live, he introduced All Along the Watchtower by noting that U2 had covered it most, I don't even know if it was most recently at that point, but U2 did a cover of All Along the Watchtower in like 1988 or something. And I saw him, you know, a couple years later, and he said, you know, this is a song U2 covered, but the problem is they didn't get the words right, you know.
Nick, I've never heard you imitate anybody before. Not it's your Bob Dylan imitation. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about that, this is a side note, is that Dylan often doesn't get his own words right. Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a whole debate among Dylanologists, Dylan geeks, whatever you want to call them, about when he changes the words in his the live version of his songs, or he emphasizes certain phrases differently. Is that just him trying to keep himself interested after performing the same songs for 60 years? Or is that because now he wants us to take away a different element of the song, or they mean something different than what they did when he first wrote them down? And it's, you know, probably something different on each day. Who knows? I mean, we're saying all this. Dylan is sort of like the trickster musician, yeah. Right? I mean, and that's, I think, part of this whole song. So
yeah, he's the trickster. And if I recommend anybody, if you haven't already taken the deep dive into Dylan, there's a documentary from 1965, I want to say. I believe it's called Don't Look Back. And I don't know if you've ever seen that, Mick.
I have, yes.
I'm obsessive about it. It's Dylan at his most annoying, obnoxious heights, where he's but tormenting and teasing reporters who ask him questions. And it gets at to what you're saying. Like when anything he does has such symbolic value that people try to read stuff into it, and then he just mocks you. He goes, "Why are you doing that, man?" I'm just a song and dance man. Remember when he said that? I'm just a song and dance man.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine ever seeing Bob Dylan dance.
I think the genius of that movie is, especially when you watch it now, or you know, recent times, is like it really captures a moment where Dylan is just sick of the hype. I mean, he was such a huge, you know, phenomenon at that time, when he broke out and everyone wanted him to do different things. I mean, there were all the folkies who wanted him to continue to be a protest singer. He, you know, famously rejected that and, went on. He wanted to write other kinds of songs. He didn't want to just be writing, you know, acoustic guitar strumming folk songs anymore. But it really captures sort of the origins of Dylan becoming that trickster figure, where it's kind of like he just doesn't want to deal with the fame and the hype. So he's going to create that. That movie shows him being cranky and being condescending at times and just kind of a jerk, like you're saying. But it also sort of answers the question of why, here we are in 2020, Dylan would drop a 17-minute song out of nowhere without really much explanation. It's because, you know, not many people, if anyone, knows who the real Dylan is at this point in time, you know? And he just created so many different personas for himself over the years. And I think that's just a way to, like, say, I don't want to be part of the hype, you know? I want to do my own thing the way I want to do it. And just, I guess, his sense of humor, too.
Well, just the tweet that he wrote as introduction is unthinkable from 1965 when he did that movie, or 64, I can't remember. I think it was 65. It's unthinkable. He's expressing gratitude to his fans. In the movie, he has disdain for absolutely everybody. You know, he mocks the people who want him to play acoustic songs. He mocks the reporters who come around asking him questions. He mocks Donovan, you know, but he starts this one off with, you know, showing his appreciation for his fans. So, yeah. All right, here we go. Then here's like the switch. So after he set up the assassination of Kennedy and led us to sort of think that he subscribes to conspiracy theories, that it wasn't just a random gunman, but that, in fact, it was a plot contrived by the most powerful people in the country to guarantee LBJ takeover, he writes this. Wolfman, oh, Wolfman, howl. Rub-a-dub-dub, it's murder most foul. Hush, little children, you'll understand. The Beatles are coming. They're going to hold your hand. Slide down the banister. Go get your coat. Ferry across the Mersey and go for the throat. There's three bums coming all dressed in rags. Pick up the pieces and lower the flags. I'm going to Woodstock. It's the Aquarian age. Then I'll go over to Altamont and sit near the stage. All right, Mick, decipher that for us.
All right, well, very quickly, the end of the Kennedy stuff, there are a couple lines I thought that were pretty interesting before he transitioned out of there.
Okay.
Where he said, thousands were watching, no one saw a thing. And then a couple lines later, right there in front of everyone's eyes, greatest magic trick ever under the sun. You know, obviously alluding to the fact that there's still really no clear answer all this time later about, you know, what happened with Kennedy assassination, who actually was behind it, and that sort of thing. So I just thought that was really interesting because, especially, again, you're always, it's always dangerous to overanalyze Dylan, but in this day and age where we're so privy to so much information, you know, the social media and everything, I mean, it's just like information. You have as much information as you want. You have to work hard to cut yourself off from the stream of information. And it just, you know, this is with Dylan, we're always guessing he's addressing something that we don't see right on the surface level of the words, right? So the fact that something is happening in front of our eyes, a greatest magic trick, perfectly executed, skillfully done, I just think that can apply to a whole host of things going on in American world politics right now.
Absolutely. So, I'll take it one step further. I agree with your analysis about the internet. We're bombarded with all sorts of information, but the relevant stuff that we really need to know and want to know is somehow or other eluding us, and it's a mystery.
Sure.
And so in this particular case, it's two meanings you could read it. Thousands were watching, no one saw a thing. So you're talking about the thousands of people who lined the street in Dallas and were thousands watching on live TV. Or you could talk about all the people in the like the FBI or the CIA or law enforcement,
right,
who were watching up until this moment. But you know how it goes, Mick. They miraculously closed their eyes. They didn't see what was right in front of them because they were in on it. So it could be, you know what I'm saying? It could work two ways. Classic Dylan, right? Greatest magic trick ever done under the sun, perfectly executed, skillfully done, again, applying that it was a hit. It wasn't just a random gunman, that it was part of a conspiracy, implying
right.
All right, then the pivot to Wolfman, oh, Wolfman.
And to these cultural references that start in the 60s, and then they kind of move forward from there. So the Beatles are coming, they're going to hold your hand, obviously, the first. I believe that's my Beatle-loving wife is sitting nearby. I believe I Want to Hold Your Hand. Wasn't that the first charting single in the United States by the Beatles?
1964. Right after
right.
this.
And then, so then you go on from there. Ferry Across the Mersey is another, that's a reference to another pop song of the era. I forgot by whom, but.
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
There you go.
What a geek.
And then we go on, obviously, to some other landmark, 60s cultural events, Woodstock, the Age of Aquarius reference, but the hippie times and Altamont, where obviously near the, and he says, we'll go to Altamont and sit near the stage, where obviously there was another infamous killing there near the stage, right? So.
Yeah, where the Rolling Stones were performing, and the Hell's Angels killed somebody in the audience.
Exactly.
And so the Wolfman, what is Wolfman? Like the chorus? Is that it? Explain Wolfman, Mick.
Well, Wolfman, and later he says Wolfman Jack, who obviously was a famous DJ from the 60s, right? And so, but I just think he's, he's just using that as like some sort of jumping off point. It's kind of like, some people say, Baby or Springsteen throws in a a Mary now and then. He directed some of his songs to Mary. Yeah. You know, I, for whatever reason, Dylan decided to use Wolfman Jack as the, you know, sort of the person. This is as close as you get to a chorus in the song, you know. Rub-a-dub-dub, it's a murder most foul. And then he continues to, at different points, he brings up Wolfman again and uses music in particular as a way to sort of get at, I think, oh, just a wide range of American historical events.
Yeah, it goes on, and I'm got my eye on the clock, mate, because I know you have an incoming call. I don't know if I should go through all these lyrics. Like you said, it's 17 minutes worth of lyrics, including this phrase in the song goes back and forth between commenting on the Kennedy assassination till more references to songs from the 60s and the 70s, etc. And here we go. Tommy, can you hear me? I'm the acid queen. I'm riding in a long black Lincoln limousine, riding in the back seat next to my wife, headed straight on into the afterlife. I'm leaning to the left. I got my head in her lap. Hold on. I've been led into some kind of trap where we ask no quarter and no quarter do we get. We're down. We're right down the street from the street where you live. They mutilated his body and they took out his brain. Man, he's just like, This is riff. He goes on. He's like cutting back and forth between the cultural references, the Kennedy assassination, his conspiracy theories. Are you seeing any kind of like larger theme emerging from this, Mick, or is he just riffing and having fun with us?
Well, I think it's both of those things. Again, I mean, as we keep saying, this is a guy who this is his idea of a good time. I think is to make all these cultural references to get us all like. You know, it's like we're back in college in an English class and we're you know, trying to analyze G.S. Eliot's A Wasteland or something. And, you know, what's every single reference in here? I mean, there's just so much. You know, it's like the only song I know of where there are references to John Lee Hooker, Tommy by the Who, the gangster Bugsy Siegel, Gone with the Wind. I mean, you can just go on and on. So there's one after another. Encourage everybody out there who is a fan either of Dylan for sure, but even if you're just a fan of like cultural stuff and you got some time on your hands these days, it's worth just reading through this. I mean, there's Shakespeare in here. There's it just goes on and on, you know, jazz references, blues references, stuff that probably you and I haven't even noticed, right? There's old gospel songs referenced in here. So what's the point? That's what you're asking.
Yeah.
I think some of it is just to be playful, but there is also, there's a line in there that really struck me as if there's kind of a thesis line in here, I think this is it. And it says, what is the truth and where did it go? Ask Oswald and Ruby, they ought to know. Shut your mouth, said a wise old owl, business is business and it's a murder most foul.
Yeah.
To me, if everything comes down to what is truth and where did it go, that's why, to me, Dylan has released this song at this time. This is all just a rumination on American culture and the fact that we live in an era of alternative truth, you know? And I think it's Dylan's joking, you know, poetic, but also joking trickster way of getting us to try to figure out what's this song about. And ultimately it's just kind of like, well, at this point in time, maybe there isn't any truth anymore. That's what I sort of take away from it. What about you?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. I'm trying to find that. Which verse is that in, that line in? I know
that is verse three. Mm-hmm. It's at the very end of verse two.
Okay, hold on. Yeah. Oh, yes. Or, frankly, Miss Scarlet, I don't give a damn. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Frankly, Miss Scarlet, there's Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind, yeah.
What is the truth and where did it go? Ask Oswald and Ruby, they ought to know. Shut your mouth. Yeah, business is business and is most memorable. Yeah, that's a memorable line. Of course, just so everybody knows, Oswald and Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald is the man who pulled the trigger that killed Kennedy, supposedly, right? We don't know.
Right.
There is no truth. Right. And what we do know is Jack Ruby, and God, Mick, I'm going to refrain and restrain from going on a riff on Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby was a lower level mobster, came from Chicago, went down to Dallas and set up a strip club. And he, of course, was the one who shot Lee Harvey Oswald as the police were leading Oswald to jail. And
It was on live TV.
So what we didn't see on live TV is Lee Harvey Oswald literally pulling the gun, the trigger to kill Kennedy. But what we did see was Jack Ruby shooting Oswald. So it's undisputable that Jack Ruby killed Oswald. But why did Ruby do that? And that's one of the chapters in the whole Kennedy assassination conspiracy, Mick, is that, you know, there's some people think that Ruby did it to shut Oswald up because he didn't want Oswald giving away the secrets as to who was behind the assassination. And then Ruby himself always claimed to the day he died that he did it to avenge the murder of Jack Kennedy on behalf of Jackie Kennedy, John Kennedy's wife. So I don't know.
And then it was spontaneous, that the killing was basically spontaneous, that he just was overcome and just had to do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jack Ruby himself died, I think within a year or something. I think he died of cancer. So he was not around certainly he was questioned. He gave his account, but he was not around for repeated interrogations as the years went on.
Yeah, it was more than a year. I can't remember when. I do know this is how twisted I am, Mick. I took a deep dive into Kennedy conspiracy theory. This is why part of the reason I love this song so much, because it melds two things that I'm obsessed with: Bob Dylan and Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination. But I actually read a book that was written by Jack Ruby's, I'm not making this up, rabbi, visited Ruby when he was in jail many times and talked to him. And the rabbi claimed to the very end, Jack Ruby insisted that it was, as you were saying, sort of an impulsive act of vengeance, and that he was doing it on behalf of Jackie Kennedy, even though, of course, he never met Jackie Kennedy, and she wouldn't want him to do this. So I don't know what to make of Jack Ruby, other than he's just this fascinating character, and it adds to the mystery. Well, I'll close with this, Mick, and I'll ask you, do you see any connection, elaborate a little bit on what you've already said, between what Dylan is talking about this song and what we're dealing with right now as we sit in our homes, talking to each other over the phone as opposed to in a studio, not going into offices, on a lockdown, trying to survive the pandemic? Do you see a direct connection?
I don't know if there's a direct connection. It's impossible to hear this song and to read the lyrics and not think that, first of all, it was likely recorded before Trump came into office, and certainly well before the outbreak of the coronavirus. So, you know, it's not like it was written in response to this moment. I mean, he even says in his cryptic tweet, this is a song from a while back. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was meaning the beginning of February. I think this is probably a number of years old. But I do think that it's the fact that he chose to release it now is certainly about the current moment. Again, all the information, all the social media, and now with social distancing on top of it, we have just all this information, yet we can't actually see what's going on. We're unable or unwilling to sort of say what the truth is. And I just think it's like a song for this moment. I mean, it is strange and elusive and also genius all at the same time.
Yeah. And one other thing that makes it a perfect song for the moment, if you're a Dylan geek, is that we all have a lot of time on our hands, and it's this 17-minute song. It's not even a song, so you could just sit there. The other day I was listening
to it. It's sort of like a slow-moving meditation, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm like, listening to it, and I go, I just said to myself, you know, I've listened to this thing too many times. I got to close it down for the day, Mick, you know.
I'm with you. All right, but I'll throw one thing out there, then I got to go take another call, and that is that if you really want to geek out after this, you can go listen to his last album of original material, Tempest, from 2012, and on that album is a 14-minute song about the Titanic. Okay? So if you really want to dive in, there's your assignment then, okay?
All right. You know what? I'll take you up on that assignment, and we'll bring you back in a couple weeks to analyze that song. All right. Go do your thing.
I'm happy to talk about Bob anytime. All right. Thanks, Ben.
That's the great Mick Dumke. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.